Welcome back to the Noise Cancelling Podcast, the only podcast that brings together some of the industry's best journalists to chat about the last 7 days in tech, gaming, and entertainment for your listening pleasure. If you like that, consider subscribing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And without further ado, let's meet who's on the podcast this week, kicking off with Cherie.
Hi, I'm Cherie L. Smith, editor-in-chief of Laptop Mag.
I'm James Peckham, phones editor for Tech Radar.
I'm Hamish Hector, a writer for Tech Radar.
And I am Matt Phillips, Tech Radar's video producer, trying to keep the energy up. Cherie always comes in with that American energy. And then as soon as we get the British guests, it's like straight down. I don't like it. Come on, guys. We'll keep the energy up. So we're going to kick off this podcast like we do every noise canceling podcast with the big question. And WandaVision has come to its conclusion. Falcon and the Winter Soldier is just around the corner. Before we get into the actual big question, Hamish, I want to come to you first because I think everybody's chat about their thoughts about WandaVision on this podcast, except for you. Obviously, it's your first time on the podcast. Welcome, welcome. So very quickly, give me your spoiler-free review of WandaVision and how excited you are now for Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
My spoiler-free overall view of WandaVision is, I think early on, like, best thing the MCU's ever made.
Wow.
As time went on, became a little bit more middle of the pack. But overall, I still think it's awesome. Particularly as a TV show, everything else they've done before has been a film, so it gives you a little bit longer with the characters. Though, when it comes to Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, kind of excited to see more of the TV-styled show, but on the other hand, it's like back to more traditional Marvel, and the sort of WandaVision was so weird and different. I don't know whether I want straight back to normal again, but I'm excited. Yeah. You know, it comes out in a week. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, what do you think, James? Are you hyped for Falcon, or are you a bit over it?
Not as hyped, but basically what Hamish has said there. I think WandaVision was so interesting, the way it played with those TV tropes and just made something really different. I am excited for Falcon and Winter Soldier. I am excited for it. I watched Winter Soldier 2 days ago in excitement for it, and I'm excited to see those characters get a bit more screen time, especially Falcon. But it does look like a more traditional Marvel affair compared to WandaVision, or even Loki. Like, the trailers we've seen for Loki look batshit, don't they? So yeah, this looks a little bit more standard, but I could be proved entirely wrong, and they may knock it out of the park. If it's anything like Winter Soldier the movie, then we're on to a winner, aren't we?
That's exactly it. And Marvel are good at taking these superheroes who are far lesser known. You know, the comics, Falcon and the Winter Soldier aren't a big deal really, but people love those characters now because of movies like Winter Soldier that feature them, and then they can really flesh them out in the TV show that's up and coming. So based on that, I want to know what minor league superhero you want to see get their own TV show. And I'm going to tack a little extra question on the end here as well. Who is going to play them? This is dream casting. You can pick anybody. I'm going to say you can pick anybody alive or dead to play your Marvel superhero character, or any superhero character. It doesn't have to be Marvel. And I can see that I have stumped everybody in the podcast by adding that little extra bit on there. But Hamish, I'm going to come to you first and put you on the spot. What minor league superhero do you want to see get their own TV show, and who will be playing them?
Okay, well, I kind of have a cheat, because the two characters I've picked have already been in the MCU, so they already have actors attached to them.
That's okay, I think.
And I want to keep them the same. So I want to see the Collector, who's played by Benicio del Toro, and the Grandmaster, who's played by Jeff Goldblum, who in the Marvel MCU were both like trying to gather people or artifacts or whatever for different reasons. Mm-hmm. I want to see them go on a Pinky in the Brain or Wile E. Coyote style show, where each week they're trying to do the sort of the same idea, you know, get this cool artifact or species of alien and add them to their collection. But obviously along the way, it goes horribly wrong because they're both bad guys. And I think these two actors could really carry that style of show. It could get really zany and multidimensional. You know, they could go across to all of these different Marvel universes and interact with the weirdest stuff that Marvel can throw at you.
I absolutely love that. I want it to be like 90% improv as well. The best moments of Thor with Jeff Goldblum in it are just him clearly just going way off book.
Like, it's absolutely going crazy. On.
Exactly.
He's just been thrown into this universe and it's like, I'm some guy, I'm some alien person. Yeah, look at me. Who's Thor?
Yeah, exactly.
He has a hammer. That's kind of cool.
I would love to see that. Cherie, coming to you then, who's the minor league superhero you want to see get their own TV show?
I have two now that I think about it, but my first choice was Blue Marvel, Adam Brashear. He was one of the first black superheroes. He was basically forced to retire because the world found out he was black because he was superheroing in the 60s. He got a Congressional Medal of Freedom, the whole nine, and he was asked to retire because he was found out to be black. He came back years later to superhero, but he's like, he has really cool powers, but he also is super intelligent, like to the point where he's one of the smartest people in the Marvel universe. I would like to see him played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, aka Dr. Manhattan, aka dude who's playing in the upcoming remake of Candyman. And in that same vein, I would like the black Captain America, Josiah, I can't remember his last name right now. I would like to see that movie. I might put Mike Coulter in that role, even though he's a little stiff, but I don't like, I might put him in the role. But for those of you who are unfamiliar, before Steve got the super serum at work, they basically were doing some Tuskegee level things, meaning they were testing the serum on black soldiers and a lot of people died, but Josiah did not. And he basically served in World War II just like Steve, same powers, all that good stuff. But because racism in America, he too was underground, and every black superhero knows who this guy is because he stayed in the community, superheroing, showing up when the Klan would show up, and then there would be no Klan, and people would be like, what happened? And all the black people would be like, I don't know. Who knows what happened? Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, I think it's a super cool idea, and I think it's something I would love to see incorporated into Falcon and the Winter Soldier, right? You could imagine, like, Anthony Mackie's character of Falcon, right, obviously digging into the background of Captain America and going, hang on a minute, there was somebody while Steve was frozen
exactly.
who was doing all this awesome stuff in the 60s, like, let's go find this person. That'd be super cool way of tying in that character.
The coolest time, like, because he has a couple of superpowered ancestors that are also in the Marvel universe, but like the coolest time you see him is when Storm and Black Panther got married. And this mysterious guy shows up and all the black people know who he is. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm meeting you. And everyone else is like, huh? It's a really good moment.
That'd be awesome. And if they introduce a character like that, you know, in a show like Falcon the Winter Soldier, then it's just easier for them to get their own show down the line, right? And we can see that stuff work out. So I'm very keen for that indeed. Pexy, let's come to you then last. Who do you want to see?
Mine is so weak compared to these two. I want a Squirrel Girl TV show. I think it's the perfect
opportunity. Oh my God, I want that.
The Squirrel Girl. So if anyone's unaware, Squirrel Girl's main powers are she can speak to squirrels. So essentially that I want that to be like arbitrarily every single episode, the solution is that she has to speak to squirrels. It can be like she's solving some sort of crimes, some squirrels watched it. She can be like she's saving the universe in some way, the squirrels need to help. I just always want the answer to it being that she talks to a bunch of squirrels. In terms of casting, you threw that at me a little bit. Immediately my brain went to Brie Larson, but I don't think that's particularly possible, is it really? We can't have Captain
Probably
Marvel
not,
and...
unless they just add that power to Captain Marvel's repertoire, right? She can do everything else, so like, why not?
True. And then my mind went to, I don't think she'd do it, but Saoirse Ronan. I think that would be a genuine, really fun piece of casting.
My brain immediately went to Emma Roberts.
Oh!
I could see her playing Squirrel Girl. I'd be down for that.
Or Anna Kendrick. That was
to star alongside Squirrel Girl, we can go with my answer, which again is kind of a cheat, but I want to see Thunder Frog. And for those of you who don't know, Thor at one point in the comics was turned into a frog for a while and just had to deal with that and called himself Thunder Frog. And so I think
Thor 5.
Let Chris Hemsworth really lean into those comedy antics. I want to see a three-way show, him, Squirrel Girl, and Rocket Raccoon. Bradley Cooper in there as well. That's what I want from this. But I think I'm going to have to go with Shuri, because I think Shuri's, like, the way that could tie into the current MCU would be awesome. It'd be this awesome callback. And I think that's the one I want to see most. And that's got me even more excited now for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I always do this to myself, come up with these crazy theories that are never going to show pay out and then get a little bit disappointed on the way out. But that's okay. I'm okay with that. All right, then, moving into this week's Gadget Hall of Fame. And Hamish, we're welcoming you to the podcast for the first time. And as with all new guests for the podcast, we ask you to bring along something to our weird little museum of gadgets. What are you going to bring in to the Gadget Hall of Fame this week?
Okay, so the gadget that I want to bring is the first gadget that I ever owned. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a Polaroid camera for sure. And looking up online, I think it was a Polaroid One Step from like the early 2000s. I just like went through pictures on Google last night because this camera has since been lost to time. I don't know where it is.
I need to Google it now. Sorry for the keyboard noise, everybody, but I need to look it up.
But yeah, it's a traditional sort of looking Polaroid camera. You know, it prints out a picture and you have a bit that pops up so you can see the light flash whenever you take pictures. And I remember just loving this thing. You know, I was like 3-4 years old, just taking pictures whenever I could, whenever my parents would decide to trust me with any film. And I can tell you, it was a bad decision on their part every single time. The pictures I took were pretty terrible.
I was going to say, when Polaroid cameras were always a part of my life, like the fear was that exactly. Like Polaroid film, not cheap. And so like to be trusted with that at such a young age, I would never give him the privilege.
I remember having loads of fun with it at the time. And yeah, I just adored this thing. You know, I used to cover it in stickers. I think part of the reason I stopped using it for a bit because one of my friends covered it in Barbie stickers. And I was like, I have to hate Barbie.
Sure.
So I had to shove this camera out the way. But still, I just loved it. You know, it was the first thing I was allowed to really use on my own. All the other tech in my life was owned by my parents and I'd occasionally get a chance to use it. But this was my thing. And that's why I loved it so much.
What sort of stuff were you taking pictures of? Is there anything that sticks in your mind that deserves to be put in a plaque next to your Polaroid camera in the Hall of Fame?
I think because it was probably a really bad idea because they all came out really blurry was, you know how sometimes at Halloween time, you can go to, people will do up their house really big with all these cool decorations. Some people would then let you go and explore this kind of like haunted house experience. And I remember I took pictures with my camera, but either it was really dark or really bright with light, which is terrible for sort of taking pictures. So I remember taking pictures of that sort of thing. But yeah, it was an absolutely awful idea because they didn't really develop well at all. But yeah, so I'd maybe put those next to it. Show off my finest work.
That, I love that. First camera is something that I definitely remember. Like I remember my first camera phone as well, and that being like a huge deal. I'd take pictures of everything. Everybody in my contacts list had to have a picture assigned to them, and they all hated it. But they had to do it because it was a thing that was now available to me. Sheree, I'm wondering, do you remember your first camera? Is that something that sticks in your mind?
I remember having Polaroids. We did a lot of those disposable cameras for a hot second. And cameras was like, that wasn't my particular tech bag, even as a kid. It was all about like video games. And as I really got into music, about Walkmans and Discmans for me.
Yeah, for sure. I remember those disposable cameras as well. The disadvantage was, right, you wait like 4 weeks to get those photos back versus a Polaroid where you just shake it out and see what it was. Love that, Hamish. Thank you so much for bringing that into the Gadget Hall of Fame. We are now upping the price of admission to the Hall of Fame because that is such a worthy entry. And that'll bring us then into the news for this week. James, we're coming to you first. Lots going on in the phone world at the moment. OnePlus 9 on the horizon, potentially, and an event coming on March 23rd, but potentially not by the time you're hearing this, because we're not sure that event's going to stick the landing, right?
Yeah, we don't know anything yet, but there are heavy, heavy rumors that Apple is having an event on March 23rd, as well as OnePlus. OnePlus has confirmed that this virtual event will be their OnePlus 9 launch. We've heard from a variety of different sources that Apple's having its, what some people refer to as its spring event, where it normally announces new iPads. There's the potential of new AirPods. We may hear something in the world of computing, but we're not really sure yet. So that's likely to happen on March 23rd. Which company is more likely to move? We think it's probably going to be OnePlus because we've had that happen before.
Apple aren't being bullied out of that spot. Come on.
Apple is the bully. Like,
exactly.
Nice day for your events. Shame if something happened to it.
Yeah.
I think OnePlus should commit. I think they should just go for it.
No one will cover it. Who's going to cover it? Who's going to be left on staff to cover it?
That is the thing. It's that noise, isn't it? And OnePlus is trying to position it itself as an alternative to the iPhone, an alternative to Apple products in that way. They want to be the iPhone of Android, essentially. That's not their official stance, but that's what we've seen in their products over the last few years. So I would be very, very surprised if we see both events happen on the same day. There's every chance the Apple event may not happen and may be coming later. That may be a false rumor, so it may stick for March 23rd. But I think the OnePlus 9 may be coming a little bit later in that regard. We've heard a few different things about the phones this week as well, and they've confirmed their partnership with Hasselblad, which we've heard about rumored for a little while. But yeah, they've signed a 3-year deal with Hasselblad to help tune their smartphone cameras, and should hopefully make for better colors, essentially, is the main focus within their smartphone camera, because that is usually the place where OnePlus phones fall down a little bit. The camera is never usually good enough. It's still pretty good, but it's never really going to compete with the absolute top camera phones on the market.
Yeah, it's an interesting move, right? Hasselblad is that brand that makes those extraordinarily expensive cameras that kind of just do one thing really, really well. And so it's interesting move to pair with somebody like OnePlus, right, who is trying to up their smartphone camera game. I'm curious, James, you know, OnePlus always known as kind of having lower price points than your average, especially Apple, you know. But we've seen all price points coming down in recent memory, right? The S21 launched at kind of a lower price, even the iPhone 12 launched at a lower price than a lot of people were expecting. What do we think for a price range on OnePlus 9? Obviously, we don't know anything concrete yet, but do we think it's going to come maybe even under £700 potentially?
I'd be really surprised. We've seen OnePlus drive that price up quite consistently over the last few years in terms of adding $50 each iteration, sort of thing. I would be really surprised. They're trying to go for cheaper handsets within their other ranges as well now. We've now got the OnePlus Nord, for example.
Yes.
There's also rumors of a third phone that it'd be the OnePlus 9, the OnePlus 9 Pro, and then a OnePlus 9e, which is rumored for some markets. Cherie, you didn't seem impressed by my comments on the camera. Do you not agree?
I have yet to, it's been a long time since I've touched a phone with a Hasselblad camera on it. So I would need to reacquaint myself. So I'm hoping that after my phone's person is done reviewing it, maybe they can shoot it to me really quick so I can play with it and shoot it back so he can do actual work with it. isn't Samsung rumored to be having an event around the 31st for its mid-tier phones?
Yeah, I think there's an event coming. Before the end of the month is the rumor at the moment that we're going to be seeing probably the Galaxy A series in some regard as well.
Which is weird because we never hear about those mid to low tier phones. Like we hear about them, like, oh, by the way, this exists. But the fact that Samsung is doing an event for it, I wonder what Samsung has up its sleeve that makes this so important.
I wonder if they've potentially just seen the benefit of doing these kinds of events, right? Like through the pandemic, right? They're certainly less budget to put them on now when you're not flying out hundreds of people to go watch them live. And so maybe there is just benefit to them staying in the headlines by having an event every 3, 4, 5 months, whatever it is. And they can do it relatively cheap during a pandemic, right?
Yeah. And also, isn't the one of the Samsung A phones their best-selling phone?
Yeah.
So that's probably why they want to do an event. It's like, well, people love this thing, so let's show them the new version. We know there's a popularity behind it. Let's shove the latest thing in front of them. They go, like, oh, I'm looking to upgrade my phone. Let's go for better of what I already have.
Affordability seems to be one of the main talking points at the moment, as Matt was saying, in terms of the Galaxy S21 being cheaper in that way. So Samsung is potentially seeing, as you say, it's one of its best-selling phones. So why not push those things harder? Why not give more focus to those A series? And from what we've seen in the leaks so far, there seem to be a lot of flagship features that are starting to trickle down to that A series. So we're probably going to see a higher refresh rate on a Galaxy A phone, which is probably going to be $500 rather than $1,000. So there's those sort of elements there that are probably going to be, for people who want a cheaper phone, that's going to make it a far better year for them than we've seen in the previous iterations.
Well, I'll definitely be excited to see what comes out of that. But let's go back to something we mentioned earlier on in this segment and the rumored Apple event. Cherie, I'm curious. You know, we mentioned in there potentially, hopefully seeing some more M1 chip style MacBooks come from this potentially, or computing devices. What are you hoping to see from this rumored Apple event?
Always laptops, but I guess I should be excited that there's rumors of tablets. Like I personally, you know, I don't believe in tablets, but you know,
Hamish's face when you said that was great.
Tablets don't exist.
They don't exist.
Someone's holding an iPad, and you just think they're holding air.
Yeah, I really don't acknowledge them, like, as a staff of record label or a company. the reason is because we have big phones. We have phablets. We don't need tablets. I just don't believe in them. But that's neither here nor there.
T-shirt. We don't need tablets. We have phablets for that.
We do.
Like, that's a good T-shirt. That's going to be the first noise canceling podcast merch right there.
Like, I carry a note. It's a big phone. We've got phones that are literally unfurling for us to give us more screen real estate. I haven't believed in tablets. Woo.
Haven't believed in a actual physical device that you could hold in your hands since they conceived.
Like,
since
maybe, like, maybe,
came out of the iPad,
like, maybe 7 years. Maybe it's been I've been against tablets that long. Like, but you know, other people do believe in tablets. Some people are excited that various models of the iPad might be coming out. People are speculating that we might see a refresh to the iPad mini, which has not been touched with a redesign since 2019. So it'd be nice. I guess it'd be nice if, you know, Apple's like, all right, here. Take this. If they do it, I hope that they at least get rid of the chunky bezels. The chunky bezels must go. And that is not to fat shame. It's just that I want more screen real estate if you're going to do that.
I love that.
If they do bring out the iPad mini, I don't expect it to have an M1 chip in it, but I do expect it to have, like, maybe somebody's hand-me-downs. They will have a hand-me-down chip that will make it, that will still make it a better choice than the 2019 version, and still keep it in that sweet spot of $399. So I'm expecting to see that. If they do that, I also expect to see the iPad Pro. But I'm really excited about the MacBooks because they're just MacBooks of every size. 14-inch rumors, 16-inch rumors, mini LED rumors, just rumors out the wazoo. But knowing Apple, they're not going to give us everything we want because we need to have at least 4 Apple events a year. So they are going to give us some of the stuff. There will be no air power. Like, there will be, like, are the tags supposedly coming out this time? Are the much awaited tags? That's not happening. I don't believe them. Like, I think it's a whole lie. I think it's Bigfoot at this current venture. The Loch Ness Monster, whatever you want to call it, that brass wing in the sky that you could never reach. But we shall see.
Sorry, well, I would say on Apple tags, I agree with you. I think it's very unlikely they will happen. But the latest version of iOS, iOS 14.5, part of the beta for 14.5, switches on an element within the Find My app, which does suggest that AirTags are probably coming very soon. But we've also said that for the entirety of this podcast existence and probably longer. So who knows?
Like, it is literally our Moby Dick.
Yeah, every other week we are chatting about these AirTags. For people who don't know, you know, this is supposedly Apple's version of Tile, a very simple tracker that would ping off of your iPhone and everybody else's iPhone to allow you to track something very effectively. I would love to see it happen, right? But what sort of features do you want to see in it that we haven't seen in trackers so far, James, that you think would actually warrant Apple doing this instead of just letting Tile have its space?
Yeah, what you've already said there, really, essentially that leveraging that network of the Find My iPhone ability, basically, or Find My Mac in those sort of ways. There was a rumor before that it could, if you've lost your iPhone at a train station, for example, you could find someone else who owns an iPhone and they would be able to track that down. I don't exactly know how that would work, but that would offer something that Tile isn't gonna offer. Those are the sort of things. Otherwise, it's just going to be another tracker and it's going to have the Apple name on it, so people will buy it because they already own an iPhone.
Sure.
That's probably the answer there, really. And Apple will see that worthwhile in that way. But I think there's something they could probably leverage there within the Find My platform that makes something a little bit different to what Tile can do.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I think the longer they wait, the less valuable it becomes as they kind of lose market share, right? As more and more people make the jump over to Android, you know, with OnePlus and everybody else kind of making these incredible phones in that space. Hamish, I'm curious, Apple tracking tags, was it something you'd be interested in at all? Are you an Apple iPhone user or are you on the Android train?
I'm on the Android train. I don't have any Apple product.
Yeah!
even if I had a tag, I wouldn't be able to use it. And also, I think tiles sell for about $25, so I'm expecting the Apple tags are probably going to be like $50 or $75 a pop.
I think even that's a little bit generous. You know, you might want to add $100 onto that estimation, I think.
Mm. And that just seems like that, especially if they don't really add any usability, apart from maybe the fact that there's more iPhones out there, so more easier to use Find My iPhone. Apart from that, I don't think they're going to be worth it. I think it's going to be a bit too niche for people to use, especially I live in the countryside rather than a larger city. So if I lose it, there's a chance that someone might walk past it once a day, let alone whereas in London, if it's in a train city. And yeah, that might work. Find my iPhone AirTags, get it out of here. I don't care. I kind of wanted to counter the tablets thing.
Go for it.
Because I know phones are getting bigger, but they're also still pretty expensive. I remember at school, when tablets were sort of coming out, they were quite a cheap option for people to take. They're really simple to use. You can write on them like a normal pad of paper or whatever. And so I think that there is still kind of that space for that, say, $300, $400 option, which tablets can offer. Whereas, you know, these phones that fold out are a lot more than that often, especially because they're newer and they don't still get quite as big. So I think that a new tablet could be a lot of fun, especially, say, the mini, because that's the cheaper option for people. So that's maybe what I'm more excited for. I'm still have a little bit of faith in the tablet.
I wonder if they're looking at kind of the the change in landscape, right, of a lot of students now working from home, a lot of other people working from home, and we're seeing this kind of Chromebook market expand. You know, people want simple devices that they can do what they need to do on them and not worry too much about them, and I think tablets fit really well in that space, as well as sort of Chromebooks and those things. So Cherie, I'm curious in 5 years' time if you'll come around on the tablet fashion trend.
No, the same way I'm not coming around on Chromebooks. No.
All right, Shree, we'll leave you with your £7,000 laptop. Complicated.
Just to be clear, there of the current laptop staff, there's only one pro Chromebook person.
What? Well, then you need to hire more diversity in your team. That's what I'm hearing, Cherie. Okay, we need the Chromebook lovers on the podcast. Let's get them on. That's what we need to sort out. Moving on then to our next news story. And Cherie, I'm coming to you straight for this one. Microsoft has finally bought Bethesda. It's finally gone through. That deal's gone through. And a statement came out with lots of little interesting tidbits of information. So what does this mean for kind of your average gamer, Cherie?
This means that the exclusivity wars might be back on and they might come out guns a-blazing. And that can only be a good thing for Microsoft, because of what everyone's been saying since the Series X has come out. Where are the games? 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 So, especially since Microsoft has been going on this development house buying spree, just snapping up houses like candy. Like, it's like candy. We've been doing tons of stuff like that. I love it. And all of this energy early in the morning. I don't drink coffee. It's amazing. But
I love it. So yeah, for those people who don't know, Bethesda obviously make really big franchises like the Elder Scrolls games, so Skyrim, those sorts of games. They also have a space epic on the works, and I can't remember the name of it.
Starfield.
Thank you very much. A game a lot of people are excited for. Microsoft basically came out with a statement. There was kind of a lot of fluff that gave them room to sort of straddle both sides of the fence, if you like, saying some Bethesda games going forward will be console exclusive to the Xbox and some won't be, basically. So we don't know if those huge franchises are going to a console exclusive. Shree, I'm curious, what do you think? Do you think Microsoft starts turning the knife here in PlayStation's back and saying, you're not allowed Skyrim, you're not allowed the next Fallout game?
I think that those games are already licensed and they can't go, they can't welch on that bit. Going forward, it's going to be anybody's guess what they're going to do. I think that it would behoove Microsoft to do timed exclusives. So the way that PlayStation's been doing Xbox for years, like, yeah, you'll get it in 6 months, maybe a year, be patient, or buy our system. I think Microsoft is going to be doing that a little bit with Xbox, because they're like, no one's going to leave money on the table, because that really is money on the table. Like, oh,
sure.
Well, we could make this exclusive and potentially force people to buy our consoles, or we can make this a timed exclusive, still reward our loyal consumers that bought that are day ones that fought and scrapped and scraped and fought the bots and the scalpers to get their Series X and their Series S's, but also still show a little bit of love and get into the wallets of the PlayStation folk.
Yeah, absolutely. And James, I want to come to you then. I know you're a PlayStation player. If Skyrim, if the next Skyrim, the next Elder Scrolls game doesn't come to PlayStation, is that hurtful to you? Like, is that a game that you enjoy and you would maybe even consider picking up a cheaper Xbox to play that game? Or do you not bother at all?
Yeah, that is hurtful. That is hurtful.
Didn't you see the look on his face when you asked that question?
I was trying to think of a better word than hurtful, but then when hurtful came out of my mouth, I saw the look on James' face. I was like, no, it's the perfect word. It's the perfect
word. Why would you say something like that?
Yeah, I've come to terms with it a little bit more now. But yeah, no, I think if they are added to Xbox Games Pass and it's a sort of thing that you get it for free basically on day one when you own that console, maybe it would make me go out and buy a Series S in that way to have that as a secondary console and then Absolutely. Have Game Pass running alongside what I'm playing on my PlayStation 5. That may be the solution there. Also, cloud gaming within by the time we get a new Elder Scrolls, I'm expecting cloud gaming on tablets. I know they don't exist, but cloud gaming on tablets to be a lot better. Connect up my DualSense controller to that and play alongside that. Maybe that would be an option for me. But again, that's playing the sequel to Skyrim on a small tablet, not my massive TV. So that's not ideal, is it?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, right? But like you say, when Netflix first started coming out and people were saying, you're going to stream 4K video to your house? That's impossible. It can't be done. Now we do it, no problem. So yeah, in 3, 4, 5 years' time, I think we're going to be streaming games, no problem. And therefore, you know, yes, all right, you might have to stream it to your tablet and then beam it to your TV maybe. Or maybe Xbox just come out with a TV app, just like Netflix have, right? And it's baked straight into your smart TV. And yeah, I think it'd be such an easy way to get so many people in on Game Pass, which is a monthly subscription service. You're going to get Skyrim 2, whatever it is, day one on that Game Pass service. Instead of paying $70, if it does come to PS5, you can pay $15 and get it for a month on Game Pass, and you're golden, right? Hey, Mish, I'm curious. Are you an Xbox gamer? Do you have Game Pass? Are you built into that ecosystem, unlike Apple?
Yeah, 100%. I am. I am all in on Xbox. Don't have a PlayStation.
We're new friends.
Don't have any of that stuff. Yeah, get it out of here. I don't care if you've got Spider-Man. Well, okay, I do care.
Yeah, you care. Well, don't do that.
Yeah, I care a lot.
Don't play that game.
I can't even lie. But yeah, I think that I'm with Cherie that I don't think some of the bigger hitters are going to be exclusive to Xbox, at least not at first. Because I mean, talking like from the Sony perspective, Jim Ryan, who's the president and CEO of that company, talked about how some PlayStation exclusive games are now coming to PC. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is because to afford making those really cool games, you need to then sell a lot of units. And if you're only selling on one system, that's really hard to do. So coming to PC, make more money. I imagine games like Starfield and even like the upcoming Elder Scrolls 6 probably were developed and budgeted with the idea they'd be coming to Xbox and PlayStation and the rest. So I imagine those then still have to come out, but maybe in 4 or 5 years' time, it might be we see more games come to Xbox exclusively. And then, yeah, if they do, even if they do come out on other platforms, they're on Game Pass. You spend, you know, $15 a month, you get not just that new game, but a suite of other titles as well. So I think it's a win-win for Xbox, whether it comes out exclusively on Xbox consoles or not. The Bethesda acquisition was, I think, a really smart idea for them.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And typically in the summer, in E3 sort of time, we would see an Xbox conference. We would also see a Bethesda conference. Both typically have strong showings at E3. Now to have those combined in what we're assuming will be a combined show only strengthens their position.
Yeah.
Hold that they keep that separate, because I because when the world opens back up, I like Bethesda typically it's one of my favorite press conferences, because they go all out. Like, sure. They have food, they have drinks, they have all like these big set pieces. And I really wouldn't want that to go away. Like, I really enjoy Bethesda's efforts during E3. It's always a fun time. So I would hope that they would allow them maintain that and not try to suck them into the make them go to the where is that, the Staples? It's not the Staples Centers, it's that Coliseum thing. It's fine, but I prefer Bethesda's and Bethesda feeds us.
I wouldn't be surprised if it goes either way. You know, they've kept this sort of doorway open with the, I think they're calling it the Vault, right? Which they're putting ZeniMax into, and they're going to say some games are going to be published through the Vault, which potentially gives them that opportunity to say it's not a Microsoft Studios game, so it can live on PlayStation. And so they could do like a Vault press conference, right? And keep those things separate and have people enjoy it that way. But moving then into the future of gaming, and Sheree, something I know you're very excited about, VR. Obviously, Xbox, we haven't seen venture into VR. PSVR, we've been hearing even more about. And now we're hearing more about new Oculus devices, new HTC devices, Facebook getting into AR. What is going on, Sheree? Break it all down for us. Is it exciting, or is it all just more fluff and VR won't be a real thing, as Gareth says?
Gareth is so wrong. He's just such a hater. I love you, Gareth, but you're a hater. So according to Mark Zuckerberg, CEO of Facebook, people like to call him Data for some reason. Well, it's not an odd reason. He kind of does look like Data, but that's neither here nor, neither here nor there. He has stated that fix your algorithms, Facebook. Stop blocking folks up in jail for just for defending themselves. But back to the story. apparently, both the Oculus Quest 3 and 4 are currently being worked on. And there's going to be a heavy focus, at least for the 3 and probably the 4, on eye and face tracking overall, which is a really good thing. It makes sense for Facebook / Oculus, because Facebook would like to make VR as social as humanly possible. And what it's got so far with its avatars for the Quest 2 with the face tracking, it's already impressive. Like, if you have a Quest 2, or if you don't, you really should try to check one out, find a friend, or spend the money and check it out, because it really is a really cool experience. Being able to have eye contact, real legitimate eye contact with someone in VR, and their mouth is moving with their words, it really just creates that immersion, like, oh, I'm really talking to someone. And I'm shocked that Second Life hadn't moved over to Oculus, but actually that makes sense, because Second Life is so advanced and complex, and all the modding that goes into Second Life, I don't think Oculus is ready to open up that level of freedom to a world like Second Life. But I think that's the goal for Facebook with this. HTC Vive, not to be left out of the conversation, they have been flashing. They've basically been Snapchatting us, sending us little flirty pics of some new device. Like, hey, hey, no, you can't see it yet. Hey, hey, like, just making us all hot and bothered and intrigued. Particularly because it looks like there is a module that is designed for lip tracking. So, which is, again, a great thing, because if you are being social and all of that, you want to have that realistic movement. And so it really points toward the future of what VR is looking for. It, like, they want that social aspect, because if you don't have, like, tech without other people owning the same tech, it's kind of like the sound of one hand clapping. Can you hear this? Maybe a little bit. Like, you can probably hear a little bit of this. Like, it's fun, but after a while it gets lonely. So it's better, especially when you're playing games, it's always good to play a friend. It's dangerous to go alone. Take this being socialness in VR. So I'm really excited to see what both companies have up their sleeve in regards to this. I'm assuming, in the case of the Quest, that we won't see anything until Oculus Connect time, which is usually late September or early October. HTC typically likes to drop around March, so I don't. Who knows? We might see an announcement down the line, because they do love a March April type of showing. But who knows? But they have definitely been sending us those flirty little pictures, and I am much intrigued.
Yeah, I love this. I love this. And everything that gets me excited about this is, you know, when you think back to sort of video games in the 90s and people were saying, you know, this looks so good, it can't look any better than that. Compare that to like The Last of Us Part 2, which just looks phenomenal. Like you say, all this technology is already really impressive. Where we'll be in 10 years time with it, I think is going to be absolutely phenomenal. And if the pandemic has taught me anything, it is that I need to go to the pub desperately. And if that's a virtual pub, I will take it. I will take it with both hands. Hamish, I'm curious, where do you fall on this VR spectrum, if you like? Have you tried VR out? Are you a believer, or do you not believe it's a real thing like Shireen tablets?
Yeah, I've had the option to. I believe it in VR. I have had the option to try it out at different things. I don't own my own headset, but it's something I definitely want to at some point, particularly like the Oculus Quest, because it doesn't need the PC. It doesn't have all the wires. That kind of thing seems really cool. So the fact that new ones might be coming out soon, that excites me. The thing that kind of worries me about some of these announcements, though, like the HTC lip tracking, is seems like a cool idea. I'm right. Like Shiri's probably right that it will make socializing way more easy and feel more natural. But it feels like it's kind of a niche add-on for niche tech, particularly because like not many people have VR headsets right now, and then fewer people have a specific one. So then having something that not everyone will want attached to a headset that not everyone has seems like it might let some really great ideas sort of be discarded because they can't make any money. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the potential future for VR add-ons should have to be maybe more like third party. So you can get this lip tracking thing that would work on a Quest, on the Vive, on say like a Valve Index or PSVR, whatever you've got. Because then it sort of lets more people be able to buy this thing. Kind of like how we were talking about with exclusive games, because then hopefully these really cool tech pieces can be used by everybody on anything.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Right, there is that barrier to entry with it right now, and it is quite an exclusive thing. For it to become mainstream, price needs to come down. It needs to become more accessible and easy to use. And it is a you have to use it to believe it type thing, right? Like the best thing you can do is get a friend to your house, which you're not allowed to do right now, pandemic, don't do it. But the best thing you can do is get a friend to your house. Let them play with it for an hour and they will be sold on it, right? There's no doubt in my mind. And so the more that that can happen, the closer we're going to get to Ready Player One style lives, and I'm all about it.
Yeah, give me that Ready Player One life. That's what I want.
That's what I want. That's what I want. All right, then. So we're going to move on now to the news blast. And Gareth was down to do this. Unfortunately, he's not here this week, so I'm going to take over, probably do a terrible job of it. But Shireen, would you mind bringing up a timer and timing me for the news blast? For those of you who don't know, this is where I run through as many news stories as I can in 60 seconds. I have to explain more than just the headline and see if I can beat the current reigning champion, who I believe is Gareth with 14. Or is it Gerald? I can't remember. I never can. I think we're going to need to start. I think it's both of them at joint 14. I think we need to start a new season of this, you know? Nobody's got that close ever since. So we need to rejig the table, I think. But we'll get to that at some point. Right now, I'm ready. Sharia, you ready?
I'm ready. And a one, and a two, and a skiddly skiddly do. Go!
I don't know. Okay, we're starting. The Sonos Roam has been announced last night by Sonos. It's everything you'd expect from a Sonos speaker, but in a much smaller package. The Google Pixel 6 could have a special selfie camera that will allow you to take, that will allow you to take 4K photo and video selfies. Who wants that? Not me. I don't need it. Black Widow's theatrical release plans have not changed. They still want to bring that movie to cinemas. Please just put it on Disney Plus so I can watch it. I am dying for it. Rumors say that changes might be coming to the Call of Duty Warzone map. Apparently a nuke is going to go off on the first anniversary and completely change the way that game plays. I'm looking forward to it. The Samsung S21 mid-range successor. We've already talked about it. It's ruined the news blast. I'm going to move on. Disney Plus has reached 100 million subscribers in a year and a half. That's insane. A lot of that down to probably the MCU films and, of course, the closures of cinemas. World of Warcraft Burning Cascade Classic. I don't know what this is. Closed beta may kick off later this month. I didn't read into that story. I apologize. Google is creating Wolverine-style earbuds with bionic learning. A hearing, sorry? What? I didn't read that one either. I apologize. I didn't get that far in the news blast. I didn't think I'd get that far.
They're going to let claws come out of your hands. You put the headphones in and you can just...
How are Google making Wolverine?
I think Wolverine's just a code name. I don't think it's... But I don't think you're getting your new exoskeleton.
Looking at Matt, just the fear in his eye, like, I don't know what this is.
I didn't think I'd get that far down the list, to be honest with you, so I stopped researching. It's a whole thing. But I'll give myself 7 points. How's about that?
It's that sort of headline that as you like go along it, you're like, what? What?
This doesn't make any sense. The more I read it, the less sense it made. And I couldn't get through it. But I'm curious. I want to get somebody's thoughts on one of these things that we talked about. So the Google Pixel 6 could have a 4K selfie camera. James, I want to come to you. Is this necessary in any way, shape, or form? Or is it a complete waste of time and money? Complete waste of time and money. There it is. That laugh that told you all you need to know.
Listen, it's not about do you need it. It's about the opulence and the extravagance. It really, really.
I was going to say, give Cherie an excuse to spend more money on a device and she will happily spend more money on a device.
Absolutely. More is more. Like, did we need 108 megapixel cameras? No, but we've gone beyond. We're still pumping them up. So, yeah, bring that on.
Well, there is no way that I will be happy with that. I look bad enough in 1080p. I don't need 4K close-ups on my face. I don't need it. Moving on then to the final segment of the show, and it's called I'm Sorry, Help Me. I don't understand this thing. Please explain it to me. Hamish, explain NFTs to me. I've been hearing all about it. Apparently, I can make millions of pounds with NFTs selling weird abstract concepts to people on the internet. It's like Bitcoin, but 10 years later. Explain it to me. Is it a massive scam? Do I need to be buying NFTs? What is going on?
Okay, so I don't know if it's a massive scam. I don't know if I'll be able to answer that question because who knows? Maybe the bubble will pop. Maybe this is game stonks. But if you ride it up, then you might succeed. But for anyone that's wondering, NFT stands for non-fungible token, which is two words that you've probably heard of, and then fungible thrown in the middle, which is
sounds
really
like
odd.
Made up.
Yeah. So something fungible is something where it's not unique. It's like a commodity. So if you if a recipe says you need 100 grams of Granny Smith apples, any 100 grams of Granny Smith apples will do because they're fungible. If you've got 10 bucks, Matt, and I've got 10 bucks, and I swap you my note for your note, they're effectively the same thing, right?
Sure.
So that's what something fungible is. So if something's non-fungible, it's special and unique. A great example might be like the Mona Lisa. Even if you had the world's best camera and you took a fantastic picture of the Mona Lisa, printed it out, spent loads of cash, you know, you've got Cherie's printer, so it's the best printer that money can buy. you would then take that to Paris and be like, yo, can I swap you this photo for that painting? They'd go, no, of course not. This is the Mona Lisa. It's unique. It's special. So that's an example of something non-fungible. Then the token is bringing that idea and making it digital. So have you guys heard of the Nyan Cat GIF? It's a pretty famous GIF. It's a cat with, I think it's a Pop-Tart body and rainbows coming out of its backside. And it's just a simple moving image.
It's the Mona Lisa of the internet, if you like.
Yeah, right? but that's a GIF that is digital, online. It's copy and pasted everywhere. You can find it on YouTube, Google, Bing, if you really want to. But now, somebody owns that GIF. They have a token, a sort of digital certificate that says, you have this thing. And this token is non-fungible because it's made using blockchain, which is the technology behind cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum. And blockchain is based this way of saying it is really complex, weird. I don't fully understand it. And I wasn't asked to explain what blockchain is, so I didn't bother looking into it.
Next week.
It's not like, you know, a file where I can just copy and paste it. So I can't just say I've got 100 Bitcoin and copy and paste that and say I'm now rich. Blockchain makes it non-fungible. It makes each Bitcoin unique. It makes each NFT unique. And so, yeah, there's all this money, particularly with art, because you can say, like, anyone can look at this picture on the internet. But you're the person that owns it. Jack Dorsey, who's the founder of Twitter, he sold his first ever tweet. Kings of Leon are selling their album as an NFT, but I think the difference there is they're not selling it as, like, a unique NFT. You don't suddenly become the owner of that single album. I think it's more like you're buying a CD. So it's kind of like you own something which says, I have definitely bought this. I've got this digital token that says I am confirmed the owner of this album, or one of the owners of this album, in that kind of way. And I think there's some cool future for the tech.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting space it's in right now, where people are kind of just using it for everything. And nobody really has a specific idea of what it is, right? I've heard the idea that, yes, you can buy this Kings of Leon NFT, and then maybe that could give you priority ticket access to their next tour, right? And so now I understand the value of it, right? I think the kind of more dodgy areas are, yeah, Jack Dorsey selling his tweet. A tweet that he made, right? And that he's earning commission on that selling of that, I believe. And then, and therefore, anybody who goes on to resell that NFT, he will also earn commission on that. And so it's this really weird space at the moment where how can you define the value of a tweet? Like, I don't understand that as much, right?
Well, it's like, I guess in that way, it's like, how do you define the value of a painting? Like, I used the Mona Lisa earlier. Sure, it's a picture of a woman, but is it the world's best painting? A lot of people say it is, and they've given it something like $1 billion or something ridiculous is how much it would cost to buy it. But is it really worth that? There's probably better paintings out there. I certainly prefer other pictures and stuff. I wouldn't want to spend $1 billion on,
sure,
on the Mona Lisa of all things. But someone said it's worth money, and I guess it kind of is. And like, yeah, the taking commission, maybe on the tweet, that could be a bad idea. But there's a cool thing for like artists, because, you know, if you sell a painting for $10 when you're starting out, that's okay. You might seem that fair at the time. But if you become super duper famous, suddenly your art might be selling for way more, but you're not getting a cut of that. So this idea of potentially giving artists a way to take commission on future sellings of their art is a way to give them more money, make it more fair, and hopefully help everybody win. But an everybody win situation seems too good to be real.
Exactly. So it does a little bit sometimes. But Shree, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. As somebody who loves extravagance, what are your thoughts on this NFT space? Is it a bubble that's going to burst, or is it the future?
I'm still learning about this. I think it's very interesting. I think that it might be a new way to cut out the middleman of the, especially when it comes to the art,
sure,
to the art world, the art critic. I mean, the art gallery, because as I understand it right now, if you are a artist and you take your work to a gallery, it gets sold, you get money off of that initial sale, but after that, when it's sold or it appreciates in value of some kind of way, you never see another dime of it. The person who sells it sees all the money. You just get the warm fuzzy feeling that my art appreciated, and like people are clamoring for it, but you never see anything except that initial whatever you sold it for. And if you're a starving artist, it probably wasn't much.
Yeah, that's the interesting space as well, right? Like, you know, we've talked a little bit about this Ready Player One future. We're all going to be living in these virtual worlds. Well, if you come over to my house and I have the Mona Lisa, right? That is the one. It's not a screenshot I took of it. That is the one. Obviously, the Mona Lisa is a bad example here, but that could actually mean something in the future, right? James, do you think we'll ever get to that point, or is that just sci-fi films getting my hopes too high?
I don't know. Yeah, you're gonna display your NFT, like your NFTs on the wall. Is that your plan?
Yeah,
for sure. Your Kings of Leon fifth album or whatever it was, framed on the wall. Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit sci-fi at the moment, but yeah, again, we would have said this about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies probably even 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago when the technology was first coming out, even probably earlier than that. But yeah, it probably is too sci-fi at the moment, but it could definitely be the future.
Who knows? Who knows indeed? If you're watching this podcast on YouTube or wherever you're listening to it, let us know down in the comments below. Are NFTs a fad? Let us know what you think. Don't go out and spend all your money on NFTs. We're not at that point yet. Don't do it. It's not a good idea. But thank you so much for listening to the Noise Cancelling Podcast. We will leave it there for today. Thank you so much for joining me, my wonderful guests. If you enjoyed this podcast, please do consider subscribing on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And just to close out then, James, if people want to hear more of your thoughts on the tech world, where can they find you in the internet sphere?
I'm at JamesRWP on Twitter. And please come to TechRadar and read my articles, please.
That would be lovely, wouldn't it? Sheree, where can the people find you?
The people can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MissSmith11. That is M-I-S-S Smith11. And of course you need to go over to laptop. You need to learn about laptops and these things that I don't believe in. Chromebooks, tablets, yeah, we talk about them. I don't necessarily believe in them, but for some reason they're there. So we have copious information about things I don't believe in, but it is what it is. VR headsets, headphones, all the like. And then, of course, laptop then, laptop now, laptop forever!
And Hamish, as it's your first time on the podcast, you need to outdo Cherie's outro just there. So where can the people find you?
They can find me on TechRadar or on Twitter at Hamish_Hector. That's it. I won't tell you that tablets don't exist. If you come and follow my Twitter, you can believe in tablets still. That's what
tablet
I'm giving
believer
you.
Inclusive. That's nice to see.
Do you believe in tablets? Oh, I bet you do.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at MattPVideo on all these social things. But the important thing, remember, go over to techradar.com and not Laptop Mag, because they're rubbish. We love you.
Oh, why you hater.
We love you guys. Thanks for listening. We will catch you on the next episode. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Shady digs.